want Lady to find someone? So she could then let her know he was alive after all? Weird people. All this for little pains. Relatively little pains. Maybe not so little to them, who in their ways were demigods. Maybe to them love was more significant than to mere mortals. The Radisha was damn near staring at him. She frowned like someone trying to recall a face. He had little to lose. He winked. Her eyebrows rose, her only reaction. But she did not study him any more. She pretended interest in her brother and the woman he thought was Lady. Croker resumed brooding. Lost in his own inner landscapes, he did not notice the crows departing, one by one. Though she had the greater capacity, Catcher did not show off the way Lady did. The coach was dull and quiet. Croker, beside the driver, clutched his lance and wondered what they were talking about below. The prince and his sister had accepted a ride because the skies had begun to leak again. The drizzle suited his mood perfectly. The driver said, "Ho!" Croker glimpsed the sudden glow in an alleyway, now drawing abreast. As he turned, a blinding, fist-sized ball of pink fire shot out, smashed into the left-hand door of the coach. A second ripped out behind it, hit the front of the coach, flared brilliantly. The horses broke loose, leaving the vehicle. A third ball hit the coach, shattered a rear wheel. The coach heeled over almost to the point of toppling. Croker jumped. The counter-momentum of his kickoff was just enough to stop the tipping. As the coach crashed back, he hit the street on the side away from the alley. Men charged out of that alley. Croker ripped open the coach door. Catcher and the Radisha were unconscious. The prince was dazed but awake. Croker grabbed his pretty suit and yanked. Up above, the driver cried out. Croker charged around the rear of the smoldering coach, smacked into what looked like a floating bundle of rags. He stabbed with the lance he still clutched. The bundle howled. Croker's blood stilled in his veins. There were three men with the howler. They turned on Croker. The prince stumbled around the front of the coach, Dandy's sword drawn. He cut one of those men from behind. The howler screamed. He waved both hands wildly. Croker stabbed him again. The whole street boomed and rocked. Croker was flung back against the coach, though he felt ribs give way. The boom seemed to echo endlessly up and down a deep canyon. His last clear thought was, not again. He'd just gotten over a serious injury. People were scurrying around like panicky mice when Croker recovered. The Radisha knelt over her brother. The more collected bystanders had dragged the attackers away. Two seemed to be dead, a third badly injured. Croker got to his knees, pressed fingers against his ribs. Pain answered, but it was not the pain of broken bones. He'd gotten through it with bruises. He pushed toward the Radisha, asked, "How bad is he?"
"Just unconscious, I think. I don't see any wounds."
She did not look at him. There was shouting way up the street. Belated help was on its way. Croker looked into the coach. Soulcatcher was gone. Howler was gone.
"He took her!"
The Radisha looked up. Her eyes widened.
"You! I thought there was something familiar."
Soulcatcher's spells had perished? He was himself now?
"Where is she?"
"That thing that attacked us."
"A sorcerer called the Howler. As powerful and nasty as the Shadow Masters. Working for them now. Did he take her?"
"I think so."
"Damn!"
He lowered himself gingerly, recovered the lance, used it to support himself.
"You people! Get out of here! Go home! You're in the way. Wait, did anyone see what happened?"
A few witnesses confessed. He demanded,
"The thing that fled, where did it go?"
The witnesses indicated the alley. Using the lance as a crutch, he had a badly twisted ankle to go with the bruised ribs. He hobbled into the alleyway. Nothing there. The Howler was gone, and Catcher with him. As he headed back, he realized what the absence of Catcher's spells meant. He was free. For a while, he was free. The Prabhendra Dra was sitting up. The onlookers, realizing their prince had been attacked, were turning ugly, threatening the attacker who had survived. Croker bellowed,
"Back off! We need him alive! I said go home! That's an order!"
Some recognized him now. A voice said,
"It's the Liberator!"
The title had been bestowed by public acclaim when he and the company had undertaken to defend Taglios. Some went, some stayed. Those moved back. The racket of help, too late, drew nearer. The prince looked up at Croker in amazement. Croker offered him a hand. The prince accepted it. On his feet, he whispered,
"Is the disguise part of some grand strategy?" "Later."
The prince must think he had masqueraded as Ram all along.
"Can you walk? Let's get off the street before more trouble finds us."
Help arrived in the form of a half-dozen palace guards. They had been summoned by someone with enough presence of mind to go for them. The prince asked,
"Someone snatched Lady?"
Bemused, he muttered,
"I guess that was the whole point, else we'd all be dead." "That's my guess. Are they in for a surprise? Let's get moving."
As they started walking, surrounded by the guards, Croker asked,
"Where was your pet wizard while all this was happening?"
"Why?"
the Radisha demanded.
"That little shit has been on the Shadowmaster's payroll for weeks. Ask him about it."
The prince said,
"I'd love to, but a demon tried to kill him and almost succeeded. He's in a coma. Won't come back."
Croker glanced back.
"Somebody ought to bring the prisoner. He might tell us something useful."
He would not. He had died while no one was looking. Croker was amazed at himself, taking charge the way he was. Maybe it was pressure from so many months of helplessness. Maybe it was the urgency brought on by the certainty that he would not have long to grab hold of his destiny. The prince had to be right. Lady had been the object of the attack. That meant the bad boys had lost track of her somehow and had thought Catcher was her. He smiled grimly. They would not be prepared for the tiger they had caught. How long would Catcher toy with them before revealing herself? Long enough? Count on nothing. Hurry. He, by damned, had to grab for all he could get while the opportunity existed. Croker finished his story. The prince and his sister had listened agape. The Radisha recovered her poise first. She'd always had the harder edge.
"Way back, Smoke cautioned us that there might be more going on than met the eye, that there might be players in the game we didn't see."
All eyes turned to the unconscious wizard. Croker said,
"Prince, you used that sticker pretty well tonight. Think you have trouble pricking him if he asked for it?"
"No trouble at all. After what he's done, the trouble I'll have is not sticking him before we get a story out of him."
"He's not all bad. He walked into a trap trying to do what he thought was right. His problem is, he gets an idea in his head and he can't get it out if it's wrong, no matter what evidence you hit him with. He decided we were the bad guys come back for general mayhem, and he just couldn't change his mind. Probably never will. If you execute him, he'll die thinking he's a hero and martyr who tried to save Taglios. I think I can waken him. When I do, you stand by to stick him if he tries any tricks. Even a puny wizard is deadly when he wants."
Croker took an hour, but did tease the wizard out of life's twilight and got him to choke out his story. Afterward, the prince asked,
"What can we do? Even if he's as contrite as he says, the Shadow Masters have a hold we can't break. I don't want to kill him, but he is a wizard. We couldn't keep him locked up."
"He can stay locked up in his mind. You'd have to force-feed him and clean him like a baby, but I can put him back into the coma."
"Will he heal?"
"His body should. I can't do anything about what the devil did to his soul."
Smoke's past cowardice looked like outrageous courage now.
"Do it. We'll deal with him when there's time."
Croker did it. Chapter 56. Shadow Spinner's shadows remained blind to my whereabouts. He did not seem able to adjust, and his bats were useless. Were, in fact, extinct in that part of the world where my band stole through the night.
I signaled a halt a mile from where my scout said Spinner had established his camp. We had come a long way in a short time. We needed rest. Narayan settled beside me. He plucked at his rumal, whispered,
"Mistress, I'm of a divided mind. Most of me really believes the goddess wants me to do this, that it will be the greatest thing I've ever done for her."
"But?"
"I'm scared."
"You make that sound shameful."
"I haven't been this frightened since my first time."
"This isn't your ordinary victim. The stakes are higher than you're used to."
"I know, and knowing wakens doubts of my ability, of my worthiness, even of my goddess."
He seemed ashamed to admit that, too.
"She is the greatest deceiver of all, mistress. It amuses her sometimes to mislead her own. And while this is a great and necessary deed, even I, who was never a priest, noticed that the omens have not been favorable."
"Oh?" "I had noticed no omens, good or bad."
"The crows, mistress. They haven't been with us tonight."
I had not noticed. I had grown that accustomed to them. I assumed they were there whether I saw them or not. He was right. There were no crows anywhere. That meant something. Probably something important. I could not imagine their master allowing me freedom from observation for even a minute. And their absence was not my doing. And I doubted it was Shadow Spinner's. I hadn't noticed, Narayan. That's interesting. Personally, it's the best omen I've seen in months. He frowned at me. "Worry not, my friend. You're Narayan, the living legend, the saint to be. You'll do fine." I shifted from Kant to standard Taglian. "Blade, Swan, ready?" "Lead on, my lovely," Swan said. "I'll follow you anywhere." The more stressed he became, the more flip he was. I looked them over, Blade, Swan, Ram, Narayan, the two armholders. Seven of us. As Swan had observed, the obligatory number for a company on quest, a totally mixed bag. By his own standards, each was a good person. By the standards of others, everyone, excepting Swan, was a villain. "Let's go, then," before I grew too philosophical. We did not have to talk about it. We had rehearsed farther away. There would be no chatter to alert Shadow Spinner. It was a slovenly encampment. It screamed demoralization. But for Spinner, my ragbag army could have beaten those Shadowlanders. And they knew it. They were waiting for the hammer to fall. We passed within yards of pickets who sat facing a fire and grumbling. Their language resembled Taglian. I could understand them when they were not excited. They were demoralized, all right. They were discussing men they knew who had deserted. There seemed to be a lot of those and plenty of sentiment for following their example. Narayan had the point. He trusted no one else to find his way. He came sliding into the hollow where we waited. In a whisper that did not carry 3 feet, he told me, "There are prisoners in a pen to the left there. Taglian, several hundred." I turned that over in my mind. How could I use them? There was potential for a diversion there, but I did not need one. "Did you talk to them?"
"No. They might have given us away."
"Yes, we'll stick to the mission." Narayan went ahead. He found us another lurking place. I began to sense Shadow Spinner's nearness. He did not radiate much energy for a power of his magnitude. Till then, I had been sure only that he was in the camp.
"Over there." "The big tent?"
Narayan asked. "I think." We moved closer. I saw that Shadow Spinner felt no need for guards. Maybe he thought he was his own best guard. Maybe he did not want anyone that close while he was asleep. We crouched in a pool of darkness 12 feet from the tent. One fire burned on its far side. No light came from within. I eased my blade out of its scabbard. "Blade, Swan, Ram, be ready to cover us if something goes wrong." Hell, if anything went wrong, we were dead, and we all knew it.
"Mistress!"
Ram protested. His voice threatened to rise.
"Stay put, Ram, and don't give me an argument."
We'd had the argument already.
He did not give up. I moved forward. Narayan and his arm holders drifted with me. So did the smell of fear. I paused 2 feet from the tent, drew my blade down the canvas. It cut without a whisper. An arm holder widened the slash enough for Narayan to slip through. The other followed. I went next, then the first arm holder. It was dark in there. Narayan held us in place with a touch. He was a patient hunter, more so than I could have been in his place, knowing the moon was about to rise and rape away the darkness. Its foreglow had been visible as we'd approached the tent. Narayan started moving, slowly, certainly, disturbing nothing. His arm holders were as good as he. I could not hear their breathing. I had to rely on extraordinary senses to keep from stumbling over things. I felt the Shadow Master's presence, but could not pin it down. Narayan seemed to know where to go. There had to be hangings ahead. No light from the fire outside reached us. How I wished for some light! Light I got, unexpectedly. Just enough light to unveil the awful truth. Shadow Spinner was off to our left, seated in the lotus position, watching us through a grim beast mask. "Welcome," he said. His voice was like a snake's hiss. It was feeble. It barely carried. "I've been waiting." The shadows had not been fooled after all. He guessed my thoughts. "Not the shadows, Dorothea Senjak. I know how you think. Soon I shall know all that is inside your head, you arrogant bitch. You thought you could take me with 3 unarmed men and a sword?" I said nothing. There was nothing to say. Narayan started to move. I gestured slightly, a strangler signal. He froze. There was a chance if Shadow Spinner truly believed these men unarmed. Then I spoke. "If you think you know me, then you don't know me at all." I wanted him closer. I wanted him where Narayan could reach him. "Dark Mother, Mother Kina, listen. Thy daughter calls. My mother, attend me." He did not move. He hit me with something invisible that knocked me back 10 feet and tore a groan out of me. The discipline shown by Narayan and his arm holders astonished me. They did not rush Shadow Spinner. They did not come to me and separate themselves farther from their target. They moved only slightly, so they were better balanced and disposed, their adjustment barely perceptible. Shadow Spinner rose slowly, a man in pain. He slipped a crutch beneath one arm. "Yes, a cripple, with no chance for repairs because my only ally won't lend me help he might regret when he decides I've outlived my usefulness. And I have you to thank." He extended a hand. An almost invisible rope of indigo fire snaked from his fingers to me. He made a pulling gesture. The rope dragged me forward. The pain was intense. I contained my scream, barely. He wanted me to scream. He wanted me to waken the camp so he could show his incompetence what he had accomplished despite their inattention. He wanted to play cat and mouse. The wall of the tent behind him exploded inward. 2 blades ripped canvas and Ram came flying through. Shadow Spinner turned. Ram smashed into him, sent him stumbling toward Narayan. Narayan and his arm holders moved like mongooses striking. Narayan had his rumal around the Shadow Master's throat so fast, my eyes insisted it was witchcraft. The arm holders had the Shadow Master's limbs extended before he lost momentum. The purple rope ripped away from me. It lashed one of the arm holders. The man's eyes grew huge. He stifled a scream and tried to hang on, but lost his grip. Shadow Spinner whipped the rope at Narayan. Narayan's eyes bugged. He lost his grip on his rumal. Shadow Spinner turned on the other arm holder. Ram grabbed Shadow Spinner from behind, by the neck and buttocks, and hoisted him overhead. Shadow Spinner lashed at him. He did not seem able to feel pain. He dropped to one knee, smashed the Shadow Master down on the other. I heard bones break. The world would have heard an earth-shaking scream if Narayan had not been so good with a rumal. He looped Shadow Spinner's neck on the fly as Ram hurled him down. Falling with Spinner, he had a tight loop on when the cry tried to force its way out. Ram and Narayan both hung on. Blade stepped inside the tent, casually drove his blade through Shadow Spinner's heart.
"I know you people have your ways, but let's not take chances."
There is an incredible vitality in someone like Shadow Spinner. Blade was right. Even stabbed several times and thoroughly strangled, back broken, Shadow Spinner kept struggling. Ram, Narayan, and both armholders hung on. I stepped up and helped Blade cut and stab. Swan stood outside the gap in the tent and gawked, so rattled he could do nothing but keep watch.
Poor Swan. War and violence just were not his thing.
We carved Shadow Spinner into a half dozen pieces before he stopped struggling. We stood around the results. All of us were covered with blood. Nobody seemed inclined to do anything but pant and wonder if we'd really succeeded. Narayan, who seldom showed any humor, broke the spell.
"Am I a strangler saint now, mistress?"
"Three times over. You're immortal. We'd better get out of here. Everybody grab a piece." Swan made a choked, questioning noise. I told him, "The only way to make sure is burn him to ash and scatter the ashes. Someone like Long Shadow could bring him back even now." Swan dumped his last meal. Even so, he looked shamed, as though he thought he had contributed nothing. I picked up Spinner's head. As I passed, I winked and gave Swan's hand a squeeze. That should take his mind off his troubles. The moon was up. It was a day short of full. Barely over the horizon, it was an orange monster. I gestured for the others to hurry, while there were still shadows to mask our going. We were halfway to the perimeter when a terrible howl rolled down out of the night. Something wobbled across the face of the moon. Another howl tore the night. There was deadly agony in it. Ram shoved me. "Gotta run, mistress. Gotta run." All around us, Shadowlander soldiers rose to see what the racket was. Chapter 57. Croker glanced at the moon as he entered the city barracks. Not 4 hours had passed since the attack, but already Taglios knew the Shadowmasters had struck at the Prabhrindra Dra. The city was united in outrage. Already the city knew that the Liberator was alive, that he had feigned death in order to lead their enemies into a fatal mistake. The military compound was swamped with men who wanted to rampage through the Shadowlands till not a blade of grass survived. It would not last. He could do nothing with this ill-armed and untrained horde. But for their sakes, he ordered them to assemble at the fortress Lady had begun, then move south in forces of 5,000. They could sort themselves out on the road. He suspected most would change their minds before they reached Goja. However strong their rage, they did not have the supporting resources to mount a vengeance campaign. But he knew they would not listen, so he told them what they wanted to hear and stood aside. The Prabhrindra Dra accompanied him. The prince was in a rage himself, but a rage channeled by realism. Croker discharged his duties to those who wanted him to be larger than life, then found the horses that had pulled the coach. While they were being prepared, he stamped around the barracks, gathering equipment and supplies. Nobody questioned him. Would-be soldiers stared at him like he was a ghost. He took a bow and black arrows from hiding. Soulcatcher had brought them out of Dejagore with his armor.
"These were a gift a long time ago, before I was anything but a physician. They've served me well. I save them for special times. Special times are here."
An hour later, the two left the city. The prince wondered aloud if he had made the right choice, out arguing his sister about joining Croker. Croker told him,
"Turn back if you want. We don't have time to examine our hearts and dither over choices. Before you go, though, tell me where Lady sent those archers."
"Which archers?"
"The ones who killed the priests. I know her. She wouldn't have kept them with her. She would have sent them somewhere out of the way."
"Vaidnabota, to guard the ford."
Then we ride to Vedna Bodha. Or I do, if you're going home.
I'm coming with you. Chapter 58.
There was no escape from the Shadowlanders' camp. We were trapped, and I did not know what to do. Ram said,
"Be Kina."
Big, gentle, slow Ram. He thought faster than I did.
It was a task of illusion, only slightly more difficult than making witch fires run over armor. It took just a minute to transform both of us. Meantime, the Shadowlanders closed in, though not with the enthusiasm you would expect of men who had caught their enemies flat-footed. I raised Shadow Spinner's head high. They recognized it. I used an augmentation spell to make my voice carry.
"The Shadow Master is dead. I have no quarrel with you, but you can join him if you insist."
Swan had an impulse. He bellowed,
"Kneel, you swine! Kneel to your mistress!"
They looked at him, a foot taller than the tallest of them, pale as snow, golden-maned. A demon in man's form? They looked at Blade, almost as exotic. They looked at me and at Shadow Spinner's head.
Ram said, "Kneel to the Daughter of Night."
He was so close I could feel him shaking. He was scared to death.
"The child of Kina is among you. Beg for her mercy."
Swan grabbed the nearest Shadowlander, forced him to his knees. I still do not believe it. The bluff worked. One by one, they knelt. Narayan and his armholder started chanting. They chose something basic, repeated mantras of a sort common in Guni ceremonials and Shadar services. They differed mainly in including lines like,
"Show mercy, O Kina, bless thy devoted child who loves thee," and "Come to me, O Mother of Night, while blood is upon my tongue."
"Sing!" Swan bellowed. "Sing, you scum!"
Typically Swan, he roared around, forcing the slow to kneel and the mute to cry out. His actions were not sane. Sane men do not force enemies who outnumber them 1,000 to 1. They should have torn us apart. The thought never occurred to them.
"We are a feeble-minded species," Blade observed in wonder. "But you'll have to keep escalating, or they'll start thinking."
"Get me water. Lots of water." I held the Shadow Master's head high and shouted for silence.
"The devil is dead. The Shadow Master is cast down. You are free. You have won the countenance of the goddess. She has blessed you, though you have turned your faces away for generations, though you have denied and reviled her. But your hearts know the truth, and she blesses you." I raised the intensity of my witchfire showmanship, became a fire with a face.
"She has given you freedom, but no gift is free."
Blade brought a water skin. "I need a goblet too," I whispered. "Keep the water out of sight." I continued trying to generate a state of hysteria. That was less difficult than reason suggested it should be. The Shadowlanders were tired, terrified. Hated the Shadow Masters. Narayan led another sing-along. Blade brought me a goblet from Shadow Spinner's tent. I prepared it. The spell was difficult, but once again I achieved an unexpected success. I knew the water in the goblet was water. It tasted like water when I took a drink.
"I drink the blood of my enemy."
To the Shadowlanders, it looked like blood when Narayan and his armholders started using it to smear marks on Shadowlander foreheads. I invested those marks with the power to stick. Those men would bear the stain of blood as long as they lived. They even put up with that, a lot of them. A lot decided to try their legs and headed for home. After a few hundred had been marked, I ordered the Shadowlander officers to join me. Several score did so, but most had chosen to stretch their legs. Their class was more committed to the Shadow Masters than were the rank and file. I told the Shadowlander officers, "There is a price for freedom, as there's a price for everything. You are mine now."
"You owe Kina. She asks one task of you."
They did not ask what.
they wondered if they had been stupid to stay. "Continue to beleaguer Dejagore, but don't fight the men trapped there. Take them prisoner when they try to escape, expecting only those called the Nar. They're enemies of the goddess." That was what they had been doing anyway, I learned. The flooding had played havoc with what food stores remained in the city. Mogaba's rationing ignored the natives. Disease was rampant. The natives had revolted already. Mogaba had thrown hundreds from the wall to drown. The lake swarmed with corpses. Such draconian measures had cost Mogaba the support of many of his soldiers. They had begun deserting. Thus, the prisoners in the camp stockade. There had been nothing but silence from that stockade. Maybe the prisoners did not know what was happening. Maybe they were scared to attract attention. I sent Blade to let them out and tell them where to find Mather. If the Shadowlanders did not stop me, I'd have to accept this absurd twist as real. They did not raise a murmur. At dawn they marched off to take their posts in the hills. Narayan sidled up, wearing his biggest grin.
"Have you doubts yet, mistress?"
"Doubts? About what?"
"Kina, have we her countenance or not?"
"We have somebody's. I'll take Kina. I haven't seen anything this unlikely since my husband... I wouldn't believe it if I wasn't here."
"They have lived under the Shadow Masters for a generation. They've never been permitted to do anything but what they're told to do. Penalties for disobedience were terrible."
That was part of it. So was the will to defy oppression. And maybe Kina had something to do with it, too. I did not intend looking the gift horse in the mouth. The majority of the prisoners had gone. I had had two held to interview. I told Narayan, "I'll see Sindhu and Mergen now." They came. Sindhu remained Sindhu, wide and stolid and brief. He told me what he had seen. He told me we had friends there. They would stay in place, ready to serve their goddess. He told me Mogaba was a stubborn man who meant to hang on to the last man, who did not care that Dejagore had become a hell of disease and hunger. Mergen told me, "Mogaba wants a place in the annals. He's like Croker was about throwing up times when the company suffered worse." Mergen was about 30. He reminded me of Croker. He was tall, lean, permanently sad. He had been the company's standard-bearer and Croker's understudy as analyst. In the normal course 20 years down the road, he might have become captain. "Why did you desert?" It was not the sort of thing he would do, regardless of his opinion of his commander.
"I didn't. One-Eye and Goblin sent me to find you. They thought I could get through. They were wrong. They didn't give me enough help."
One-Eye and Goblin were minor sorcerers, old as sin, perpetually at loggerheads. Together with Mergen, they were the last of the Black Company from the north, the last of those who had elected Croker captain and made me his lieutenant. We talked. He told me the men we had recruited coming south were disaffected with Mogaba. He said,
"He's trying to make the company over into crusaders. He doesn't see it as a warrior brotherhood of outcasts. He wants it to be a bunch of religious warriors."
Sindhu interjected,
"They worship the goddess, mistress, they think, but their heresies are revolting. They are worse than disbelief."
Why was he incensed? A prolonged exchange failed to illuminate me. No godless person can comprehend those minute distinctions in doctrine that provide true believers excuse for mayhem. It is hard enough to accept the fact that they really believe the nonsense of their faiths. I always wonder if they are pulling my leg with a straight face. Those two gave me a lot to digest. I tried, but it was morning. Sleep or no sleep, it was time to be sick. I was sick. Chapter 59. Long Shadow's insubstantial messengers warned him of Howler's return long before Howler appeared. He went to Howler's landing place to wait. He waited, and waited, and grew troubled. Had the little ragbag undertaken some treachery at the last instant? No, Shadow said. No, he was coming. He was coming. He was slow. he was in mortal agony. Never had he endured such pain, never had he suffered so long. Pain obliterated consciousness. All that remained was will supported by immense talent. He knew only that he had to go on, that if he yielded to the pain, he would tumble from the sky and end his life in the wastes. He screamed till his throat was raw, till he could scream no more, and the poison continued spreading through his old flesh, eating him alive, raising the level of pain. He was lost. None could save him but one who wanted him destroyed. The blazing, crystal-topped towers of Overlook rose above the horizon. Howler was but a few leagues away, Shadow said, barely able to keep moving. He had the woman, but was otherwise alone. It began to make sense. Howler had had to fight. Senjak had been stronger than anticipated. Let Howler get her here. Let Howler manage that. Once he had the woman, he would have no more need of the Howler. The woman's knowledge would be enough. Then shadows came from somewhere far away, frolicking in with news that had him cursing before he heard the half. Shadow Spinner slain? Killed by the devotees of that mad goddess Senjak had claimed? Was there no end to the bad news? Could not two good things happen in succession? Must a triumph always presage a disaster? Stormguard was lost. Shadow Spinner's host would evaporate like the dew. Half the Shadow Empire's armed strength would disappear before sunset. Those ragged remnants of the Black Company would come out of the city. That madman who led them would pursue his insane quest. But he had Senjak. He had a living library of every power and evil ever conceived by the mind of man. Once he broached that cask, nothing on earth could deny him. He would be more powerful than even she had been, the equal of her husband at his zenith. There were things locked in her head she would never use. There had been a core of softness to her at her hardest.
He was not soft. He would not discard a tool. He would rule. His empire would dwarf the domination and the lady's successor empire. The world would be his. There was no one in it who could stand in his way. No one could match him power for power now, with Howler crippled and under sentence of death. A random crow fluttered by, behaving as a normal crow should, but its flight brought filth to his lips. He had forgotten, if only for a moment. There was one. She was loose out there somewhere. The Howler's carpet came wobbling down, Howler's gurgling agony preceding it. It plunged the last dozen feet, collapsed. Long Shadow cursed again. Another tool broken. The woman, unconscious, tumbled off. She lay still, snoring. Howler tumbled too, and did not stop moving when he stopped rolling. His body jerked convulsively. A whine poured from him between attempts to scream. A cold chill crept Long Shadow's spine. Senjak could not have done this. A poisonous sorcery of tremendous potency was gnawing at the little wizard. It was so powerful he could not defeat it alone. There was something terrible loose in the world. He knelt. He rested his hands on Howler, forcing down his loathing. He reached inside and fought the poison and pain. It retreated a little. He pushed himself. It retreated farther. The respite gave Howler strength to join the struggle. Together they fought it till it receded far enough for Howler to regain his reason. The little sorcerer gasped, "The lance! They have the lance! I did not sense it. Her bodyguard stabbed me twice." Long Shadow was too shocked to curse. The lance was not lost. The enemy had it. He croaked, "Do they know what they have?" They had not before. Only the mad captain and Stormguard knew what it was. If they learned the truth... "I don't know," Howler squeaked. He started shaking again. "Don't let me die." The lance. Take one weapon away and they found another. Fate was a fickle bitch. Long Shadow said, "I won't let you die." He had meant to until that moment. But they had the lance. He would need every tool he could find. He shouted at his servants, "Bring him inside! Hurry! Throw her into the keystone cell! Put shadows in there with her!" He cursed again.
It would be a long time before he could tap that cask of knowledge. It would be a long battle saving Howler. The poison-eating Howler was the most potent in this world because it was not of this world, if legends were true. He glanced southward, at the plain of glittering stone, shimmering in morning's light. Someday. The lance had come out of there in ancient times. It was a toy compared to what lay there still, ready to be taken up by him who had the will to seize it. Someday. Chapter 60. I invested 6 days arranging my own investiture of Dejagore. Fewer than 6,000 men remained of the three great armies Shadow Spinner had gathered. Half those men were substandard for various reasons. I strung them along the shores of the lake. My own men I posted behind them. Then I sent Mergen back to the city. He did not want to go. I did not blame him. Mogaba might execute him. But somebody had to go to the survivors and let them know they could come out. He was to tell everyone but Mogaba's loyalists. My own people did not understand. I did not explain. They had no need to know. They needed to carry out orders. The night after Mergen left, several dozen Taglian soldiers deserted from the city. Their reports were not pleasant. Disease was worse. Mogaba had executed hundreds more natives and a dozen of his own troops. Only the Nar were not grumbling. Mogaba knew Mergen was back, suspected he had seen me, and was hunting him. He'd had a bitter confrontation with the company wizards over the standard-bearer. Mutiny was in the offing, unless the desertions absorbed that energy. That would be a first. Nowhere in the annals was there a record of a mutiny. Narayan grew more nervous by the hour as he worried about his delayed festival, frightened I would try to evade it. I kept reassuring him. There's plenty of time. We have the horses. We'll go as soon as we have this set. Also, I wanted some idea of what was happening south of us. I'd sent cavalry to see what effect news of Spinner's fate was having. Little information had come back yet. The night before Narayan, Ram, and I headed north, 600 men deserted Mogaba and swam or rafted out of Dejagore. I had them greeted as heroes, with promises of important positions in new formations. Shadow Spinner's head, with the brain removed and destroyed, greeted them at the entrance to my camp. It would be our totem in days to come, in lieu of the missing company standard. 600 in one night. Mogaba would be livid. His loyalists would make it difficult for that to happen again. I gathered my captains, such as they were. Blade, there's something I have to do up north. Narayan and Ram will go with me. I'd hoped to know more about the south before I left, but we have to take what we get. I doubt Long Shadow will do anything soon. Keep your patrols out and sit tight. I shouldn't be gone but 2 weeks. 3 if I visit Taglios to report our success. You might reorganize now that we have some real veterans joining us, and consider integrating any Shadowlanders interested in enlisting. They could be helpful. Blade nodded. He had few words to waste even now. Swan looked at me with a sort of soulful longing. I winked, suggesting his time would come. I'm not sure why. I had no reason to lead him on. I did not mind him remaining attached to the Radisha. Maybe I was attracted. He was the best of the crop, in his way. But I did not want to stumble into that trap again. The heart is a hostage, the old saw says. Better not to give it up. Narayan was happier once we rode out. I was not thrilled, but I needed his brotherhood. I had plans for them. Shadow Spinner might be dead, but the struggle had just begun. Long Shadow and Howler had to be faced, and all the armies they could call up. And if those failed at every confrontation in the field, there was still Long Shadow's fortress at Shadow Catch. Rumor had Overlook tougher than my own tower at Charm had been, and getting tougher every day. I did not look forward to the struggle. Despite the luck I'd had, Taglios was not ready for that kind of fight. Maybe luck had bought me time enough to raise my legions and train them, to mount leisurely expeditions, to find capable commanders to retrain myself in the use of my lost skills. My immediate goals had been attained. Taglios was in no immediate danger. I had my base. I was in undisputed command and unlikely to have more trouble with the priests or Mogaba. With care, I could lock up the stranglers as an adjunct to my will, an invisible arm able to dispense death anywhere someone defied me. My future looked rosy. The biggest potential nuisance was the wizard's smoke, and he could be handled. Rosy! Positively rosy! Except for the dreams and the sickness, both of which were getting worse. Except for my beloved sister. Will, lady? The will reign triumphant. My husband had said that often, confident that nothing could resist his will. He had believed that right up to the moment I killed him. Chapter 61. Croker trotted his mount into the garrison encampment above Vedna Bota Ford, which was a minor crossing of the main, used mostly by locals and open only a few months each year. He dismounted, handed his reins to a gaping soldier who had recognized the Prabhrindra Dra. The prince needed help dismounting. The ride had been hell for him. Croker had shown no mercy. The ride had been little better for him. "You really do this for a living?" the prince groaned. His sense of humor had survived. Croker grunted,
"Sometimes you can't waste time. It's not like this all the time."
"I'd rather be a farmer."
"Walk around, work out the stiffness."
"That will irritate the sores."
"I'll put ointment on after we talk to whoever's in charge."
The soldier now held both horses and stared. By now others had recognized them. Word flew around like swallows dipping and darting. An officer loped out of the only permanent structure in the compound, gathering his clothing around him. His eyes bugged. He dropped onto his face before his prince. The Prabhrindra Dra snapped,
"Get up! I'm in no mood for that."
The officer rose, murmuring honorifics. The prince grumbled,
"Forget me. I'm just following him. Talk to him."
The officer turned to Croker.
"I'm honored, Liberator. We thought you dead."
"I thought I was too, for a while. And I need to get that way again. The prince and I are joining your company. We're not being watched now, but we'll be hunted soon by a distant and wicked eye."
He was sure the search had not yet begun because no crows had chased them during their ride.
"When the search passes this way, we want to be indistinguishable from your soldiers."
"You're in hiding?"
"More or less."
Croker explained some. He stretched the truth some, bent it some, made it clear that powerful enemies wanted to find him and that the fate of Taglios could hinge on their remaining anonymous till they joined Lady at Deja Gore.
"First thing you do,"
he told the officer,
"is make sure none of your men speak to anyone outside the camp. Our presence isn't to be discussed at all. Our enemies have spies everywhere. Most aren't human. A stray dog, a bird, a shadow could carry tales. Every man has to understand that. We can't be discussed. We'll take different names and become ordinary troopers."
"I don't quite understand, sir."
"I don't think I can explain. Take us being here as proof. I'm back. Escaped from captivity, and I need to reach the main army. I can't alone, even disguised. Do you have men who know how to ride?"
"A few, possibly."
Puzzled.
"These horses have to be returned to the new fortress, hopefully before the hunt starts. They're a dead giveaway. Their riders should make no stops and should disguise themselves. We don't want them identified with this company."
Croker had not discussed plans while traveling because someone might hear. But the prince got the drift quickly.
"You're going to march this company down to Deja Gore?"
"Yes. You and I will be archers in the ranks."
The prince groaned.
"I have less experience walking than riding."
"And I have a tender ankle. We won't push."
While Croker talked, his gaze darted, seeking the potential listener. He continued talking to the officer. Again and again he tried to drive home the need for the archers to keep quiet about their mission till they found Lady's army. One slip could kill them all. He made it sound like the Shadow Masters had all their men and demons out trying to destroy him and the prince and anyone with them. True in theme, anyway. The officer rounded up volunteers to return the stallions, impressed them with the need to deliver the animals rapidly, without telling anyone where Croaker and the prince had gone. He sent them off. Croaker sighed.
I feel safer already. Get me a turban and some Shadar clothes, and something to darken my hands and face. Prince, you look more goony.
Half an hour later, they were ordinary archers, except for accents. Croaker became Narayan Singh. Half the Shadar alive were Narayan Singh. The prince adopted the name Abu Lal Khadresgra. He felt it would shield him from scrutiny because it suggested mixed Vedna and Guni parentage, which could only mean that his mother had been a Guni prostitute. No one in his right mind would think the Prabhendra Dra could demean himself that far. Croaker chuckled.
Maybe so. Get some rest. Use that horse liniment. We'll pull out as soon as we get stores and transport together.
A day and a half later, grimly silent, ready for anything, the archers crossed the river. Croaker grew more fearful and excited by the hour. How would Lady react when he turned up alive? He was scared of the answer. Chapter 62 Long Shadow did without sleep for 6 days while he fought the sorcery gnawing at Howler's flesh and soul. He triumphed, but barely. Then he collapsed. Shadowcatch was an old, old city. Forever in the looming shadow of glittering stone, it was a repository for much ancient lore, much known nowhere else, much known only to Long Shadow, who had plundered its libraries and had disposed of everyone who shared any knowledge he coveted. Among the legends of the plain, which had been old when the city had been founded, was one about the Lances of Passion. It said their heads had been forged of metal taken from the sword of a demon king devoured by Kina during the great battle between light and shadow. That demon king's soul was imprisoned in the steel, fragmented amongst 8 lance heads. He could not be restored while Kina slept. The shafts of the lances, too, were the object of legend. 2 were supposed to have been formed from the thigh bones of Kina herself, taken after she had been tricked into endless sleep. 1 was supposedly the penis of the Regent of Shadow, that Kina had hacked off during the great battle. The rest were supposed to be of wood from the tree in which the goddess of brotherly love, Ravi Lemna, had hidden her soul shortly before the wolves of Shadow ran her down and devoured her, soon after man was created. Kina had witnessed the concealment and had torn up the tree and had made it into arrows and lance shafts. If ever the Lords of Light did bring Ravi Lemna together again, out of the bellies of the hateful wolves, she would have no soul. And they could not get that back for her while Kina lay sleeping. Each of the outbound free companies of Katavar had followed one of the lances when they had broken into the world to bring on the Year of the Skulls. But who had sent them forth? Long Shadow could not be sure. The ghost spirit of sleeping Kina? The Lords of Light, who would restore Ravi Lemna? The children of the Demon King, who remained imprisoned in those lance heads while she slept? The Regent of Shadow, wary of being at a disadvantage in the lists of love? The librarians of old recorded the return of all the companies but one. The Black Company, which lost its own past and wandered aimlessly down the centuries till it elected a captain eager to seek out its roots. Long Shadow knew very little about the lances, but he did know more than anyone else alive. Howler and Catcher suspected some. No one else had a hint that the Black Company standard was anything but an old artifact that had survived for centuries till it vanished during the battle at Dejagore, only to resurface in Taglios, in the hands of a bodyguard. Its recovery was high among Long Shadow's priorities. He would send for it as soon as Howler recovered. He would devote his own time to harvesting the knowledge of his captive. But first he slept, having conquered the Howler's wounds. Chapter 63 It took the imp Frogface 5 days to locate his mistress. Then he waited till the attention of Overlook's master lapsed before he made his way inside. He entered with trepidation. Longshadow was a powerful sorcerer, dreaded in the demon worlds. His entry disturbed no one. Overlook's defenses were meant to stop shadows from the south. He found his mistress in a dark cell beneath the fortress's roots, her drugged mind in a cell of its own, deep inside her brain. He debated. He could forget her. He could help and maybe win his freedom. Freeing her was not within the specific orders she had given him. He stretched out beside her, bit a hole in her throat, drank her blood. He cleansed it and returned it. She wakened slowly, sensed what he was doing, let him finish. He closed the wound. She sat up in the darkness.
The Howler. Where am I?
Overlook.
Why?
Namus took you for your sister.
She laughed bitterly.
My act was too good.
Yes. Where is she? Last seen near Dejagore. I hunted you for a week.
And they couldn't see her?
She's getting stronger. What about Croker?
I've been hunting you.
Find him. I want him back. I can't let him reach my sister. Do anything you have to stop that.
I'm forbidden to take life.
Anything else, then, but keep them apart.
You don't need help here?
I'll handle... You're free to roam here?
Pretty much. Parts are sealed behind spells only Longshadow can penetrate.
Search the place. Tell me what everyone is doing. Then find Croker and my sister.
The imp sighed. So much for gratitude. She caught the sense of the sound.
Do it right and you're free. Forever.
Right. I'm gone.
She waited for her captors to come receive their surprise. As she waited, she heard the whispers of darkness carrying from the nearby plain. She caught some of what was said, began to taste the fear that plagued Longshadow. She could not just sit there like a trapdoor spider waiting. Longshadow and Howler were sleeping. She should go. The very stones of Overlook had been hardened against sorcery. She melted her way out, for those stones would melt before they yielded. The lower levels were dark. Surprising. Longshadow feared the dark. She climbed slowly, wary of ambushes, but she encountered no one. She grew nervous as she approached the light. Nothing waited there either, apparently. Was the fortress deserted? Something was wrong. She extended her senses, still detected nothing. Onward and upward. And more nothing. Where were the soldiers? There should be thousands constantly scurrying like blood in the veins. She spied a way out. She had to descend a stairway to reach it. She was halfway down when the attack came. A wave of little brown men carrying cruel halberds, wearing armor of wood and strange, ornate animal helmets. She had a spell prepared, a summoning that taxed her limits. She struck a pose, loosed it. It broke a hole in the fabric of everything. Sparks of 10,000 colors flew. Something huge and ugly and hungry started through, tearing the hole wider. Steel left no mark upon its snout. Its snarls chilled the blood. It ripped itself out of the womb of elsewhere and flew after the garrison. Men screamed. It ran faster than they did. Soulcatcher walked out into the night, blanketing Overlook.
That will keep them busy.
She looked north, angry. A long walk lay ahead of her. Chapter 64. The bridge I had wanted built was incomplete, but we did cross on foot while soldiers brought our mounts across by the ford. My move was symbolic, meant to lend encouragement to the engineers. Narayan was impressed, and Ram was indifferent, except to say it was nice to cross the river without getting his feet wet. He did not see the implications of a bridge. Because I was sick, it took longer to reach Goja than I anticipated. We were pressed for time. Narayan rode the edge of panic, but we reached the Holy Grove late the evening before the ceremonies.
I was exhausted. I told Narayan, "You handle the arrangements. I can't do anything more." He looked at me concerned. Ram said,
"You must see a physician, mistress. Soon."
"I've decided to. When we're done here, we head north. I can't take this much longer."
"The rains..."
"The season would start soon. If we dallied in Taglios, we would return to the main after it started rising. Already there were scattered showers every day. The bridge is there. We might have to leave our mounts, but we can get across." Narayan nodded curtly.
"I'll talk to the priests, see that she rests, Ram. Initiation can be stressful."
That was the first I had heard it hinted that I was expected to go through the same initiation ceremony as everyone else. It irked me, but I was too tired to protest.
I just lay there while Ram borrowed fire and rice and prepared a meal.
Several jamadars came to pay their respects. Ram warned them off. No priests came. By then I had sunk into a lassitude so deep I did not bother to ask Ram if that was significant. I caught movement from the corner of an eye, a watcher where none should be. I turned, caught a glimpse of a face. That was no deceiver. I had not seen that face since before the fighting that had cost me Croker. Frog Face, they called him. An imp. What was he doing here? I could not catch him. I was way too weak. Nothing I could do but keep him in mind. I fell asleep as soon as I'd eaten. Drums wakened me. They were the drums with deep voices, the kind men sound by pounding with fists or palms. Boom, boom, boom. No respite. Ram told me they would not let up till next dawn. Other drums with deeper voices joined them. I peered out of the crude lean-to Ram had built for me. One was not far away. The man pounding the drum used paddle mallets with handles 4 feet long. There was one such drum at each of the wind's 4 quarters. More drums throbbed within the temple. Ram assured me it had been cleansed and sanctified. I did not much care. I was as sick as ever I had been. My night had been filled with the darkest dreams yet, dreams in which the whole world suffered from advanced leprosy. The smell lingered in my nostrils, worsening the sickness. Ram had anticipated my condition. Maybe he had watched me in my sleep, predicating my sickness from how I rested. I don't know. But he put up a crude privacy screen so I would not become a public entertainment. I was past the worst when Narayan came in.
"If you don't go to see a physician after this, I'll personally drag you to Taglios."
"Mistress, there's no reason not to take the time."
"I will, I will. You can count on it."
"I do. You're important to me. You're our future."
Chanting began in the temple. Why is it different this time?
"So much to crowd in. Ceremonial obligations and initiations. You won't have anything to do till tonight. Rest. And you'll rest again tomorrow if the ceremony wears you out."
Just lying around. Nothing to do. That was a strain itself. I could not recall a time when I'd had nothing to do but lie around. Once I got control of my nausea, I tried to extend and stretch my talents. They were coming back almost of their own accord. I was capable of more than I suspected. I was close to being a match for the wizard's smoke now. Good news must be balanced by bad, I suppose. My elation died when I looked up from cupped palms and found myself caught in a dream right there in broad daylight. I could see both the horror of the worst dream and the grove around me. Neither seemed completely real. Neither was more substantial than the other. I went from the caverns of death